This is Progressive Radio, a conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to a special edition of Progressive Radio. This week, I'm delighted to have in the studio with me one of my favorite writers and storytellers in the whole world, Eduardo Galeano, whom we've been lucky to have in the Progressive Magazine now and again. He's Latin America's Howard Zinn and Noam Chomsky and Voltaire, all rolled into one, I suppose, with a voice and a style all his own. He's famous for his Open Veins of Latin America and Memory of Fire and other works. His latest book is called Children of the Day, is a calendar of human history, though I'd subtitle it a calendar of wisdom, history, resistance, free thought, feminism, nature, art, beauty, and joy. Eduardo Galeano, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Hola, hola.
It's a real delight and honor to have you here. Right before we went on, you said you wanted to talk about the dictatorship of fear.
It's one of the possible subjects, you know. We have a lot of things about. We may talk about anything you want.
So tell me about fear.
I mean the dictatorship of fear, because, you know, this is, it's organized. The world nowadays is I feel that it's organized in order to justify the militarization of the world. So it's the dictatorship of fear. It's a world in panic, living in panic always, and passing across or getting inside and outside, happily enough, finally, the airports in the United States. It's a rich experience in this sense. The striptease, sort of striptease you're obliged to do.
Striptease.
Get off your shoes, get off your belt, get off whatever you're carrying here in this and this other thing. Stay there, go away. And my wife had a dream. She's a sort of a queen of dreams, marvelous dreams. So expressive about this. We were in an airport, we both, the two of us, in a long, long line of passengers waiting, each one taking the pillow with which they, her or him, had slept the night before. And so all these passengers were going through with their pillows, each one with one pillow, through a machine specialized in reading pillows to detect dangerous dreams that could be dangerous for national security.
The national security state may get there yet.
No, but it's a perfect symbol. I mean, this dream was a perfect symbol of this world with sick of fear.
And is that dictatorship of fear mostly here in the United States, or do you find it everywhere?
Everywhere. Now, you know, the president of the United States is the president of the planet. I mean, it's spread all over the world, the American way of life, the fears felt here inside the country are going outside immediately and become fears of the entire world.
And yet,
always to justify the military budgets and the fact that we are humans specialized in mutual extermination.
Mutual extermination.
Yes. My English is very poor, Matt. Sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine. My guest is Eduardo Galeano. He is the author of The Open Veins of Latin America, of course, but also his most recent Children of the Days, a calendar of human history, but it's a lot more. If you love reading, this is a great book to enjoy. It's literally a calendar in that there's a page a day about with a story.
Yeah, each day contains a story that deserves to be told.
And they're informative, they're fun, they're parables, they're observations, fables, some of them, and they're historical accounts. So I recommend to you, the listener, that you pick up this book, Children of the Days. If you've never read anything by Eduardo Galeano, this is a great introduction to his unique voice and style. Dictatorship of fear in Latin America, I would think, in most places is not as strong as it used to be, because we see in Bolivia and in your home country of Uruguay and in Venezuela and in Brazil and in Ecuador a new hope for a kind of democratic socialism.
Well, there is a worldwide war, a worldwide war of indignation against indignity in Latin America and Europe and everywhere, even here, of course, in the States also.
And that indignity is brought by whom?
The indignity movements, spontaneously raising in everywhere, Los Indignados in España, and in all the different versions of these new social movements who were unexpected at all and are nowadays appearing and multiplying in all places. And it's very stimulating. It's an answer to this challenge, the challenge of a world organized to live in panic.
And that world is organized by, I mean, in whose interest is that panic? And who's organizing the world for
military,
panic?
The military, big business, mm-hmm. and all around it. Because, you know, the military expenses, I was told, I don't know if it's true or not, that here in the United States, military expenses devours, eat half of the budget, the national budget. No? Is it true?
It depends how you count. But the literal military budget is about $700 billion, the Pentagon's budget, out of about $3 trillion. And then there are other areas like the Department of Energy makes nuclear weapons, and it's not counted as the Pentagon's budget.
That is related to...
And the CIA and other...
To the military, yes, because it's sort of obsession nowadays, no? And as usual... And this militarization needs enemies to justify itself. And if enemies doesn't exist, they should be invented. And this is a factory of enemies. And some inventions I discovered in this book, Children of the Days, were surprising for me. I mean, I didn't even suspect that it could happen. Nelson Mandela was included in the list of dangerous terrorists, dangerous for the national security, during 60 years. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine Nelson Mandela, the most prestigious African of all, during 60 years up to year 2008?
Well, that's crazy.
He was a terrorist.
Have you ever met him?
No. No, but it was a surprise for me. I didn't suspect that. It is clearly not serious, this war against terrorism.
Well, and it's crazy.
It's an alibi.
It's an alibi. And here in the United States, the enemy then can lose his costume and become a friend and then become an enemy. Yasser Arafat was an enemy and a terrorist, and then he was a friend. You had... you know, in Panama, Noriega was a friend, and then he was an enemy. Gaddafi was an enemy, then he was a friend, then he was an enemy again.
Yes.
And so the parts are almost interchangeable in a way.
They are actors, or actors working in a big, enormous theater called the planet, our world. And sometimes they play the good guy and sometimes the bad guy.
But it's theater of the absurd.
Bin Laden was perfect.
Bin Laden was
made in the factories the Pentagon.
Right. He died. He was aided by the CIA to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan. So we have all those enemies, and the enemies today are North Korea or Iran.
Yes, they may be invented tomorrow if they. If the military machine needs enemies, it's easy to invent them.
One of the things you've written about in your whole career, Eduardo Galeano, is the economic imposition of fear by the IMF and the World Bank.
Yes.
Now, it seems like the IMF in Latin America has lost its ability to whip people. Is that true?
Yes. It's not so strong as it was before, but they are still alive as institutions. They say they are international organizations, but they are not at all international. They are controlled, owned by five countries, six countries, and the minority groups of multi-billionaires inside each one of these five or six countries.
And it's a wing of the U.S. Treasury, of the U.S. government, by and large, too. And now they're imposing austerity throughout Europe. People in Europe and Greece
yes.
are facing
Europe
by
is,
people
is
in Latin America were
yes,
facing.
Yes, it's true. It's Latin Americanized now with this huge drama, this tragedy in countries like Spain, for instance. More than six million and a half of workers who lost their jobs, and their jobs and their homes. Most of them, they also lost their homes. It's a tragedy. Always, like in wars, the economic measures taken by the governments in time of crisis, they always punish. The poor people. It's like wars, the wars. Who is dying in the wars? Only poor people.
And same in Greece and Spain and Portugal now, though, and in Italy to some extent, too. You have the poor people being punished for the excesses of the banks. Some of the banks were in the U.S., some of the banks were in Europe, and now it's not the banks who are suffering. Everyone else is suffering.
The bankers are the owners of the world nowadays, you know. In this book, I say in one of the chapters about the nature and the crisis of nature all over the world, and I wrote a sentence saying something like, "If nature would be a bank, it would be saved."
Mm-hmm. It would have been bailed out by now, but it's not a bank. But in Latin America, some countries are recognizing nature and the rights of nature.
Yes, in the constitution at least, in Ecuador and Bolivia mainly. You know. But I hope this will be translated into acts, because still we have in all Latin American countries this contradiction between the human rights and the rights of nature, still divorced. Some measures taken by progressive governments in our countries are terrible for nature, devastating, mm-hmm. and it's bread for today and hunger for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. But there's some hope in some of the countries in Latin America that you mentioned, and Costa Rica, too, has done a very good job in preserving its
yes.
natural treasures.
Yes, there is always alive an energy of creation and an energy of indignation against indignity.
Mm-hmm. And where do you think this indignation movement is going to go?
I don't know, but we should celebrate the fact that it exists. And where will it go? Who knows? I'm not a prophet. And it's infinite, while it's alive.
The possibilities are infinite for it.
Yeah, like love. Love is also infinite while it's alive.
I'm speaking with Eduardo Galeano. He's the author of Open Veins of Latin America, Memory of Fire, and his latest book, Children of the Days, A Calendar of Human History. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. You're listening to Progressive Radio. And it's a real pleasure to have you here in the studio, Eduardo Galeano, whose writing I've admired for so long. You write also, I wonder about U.S. domination of Latin America a lot, and the whole world, as you say, President Obama is the president of the world. But it's odd in Latin America that the United States has, has not intervened so much, except with the attempt to overthrow Chavez in 2002 and has and that Latin American countries have been able to proceed without the coups that have been so much a part of Latin American history and backed by the United States government. Why do you think, is the United States too distracted? Is it too weak? Is Latin America
nowadays,
too strong?
Yes, it's perhaps not the same situation than some years ago, no? But no war is honest enough to say, to confess, I kill to steal. And the same thing happened with invasions or foreign interventions. I was in Brazil in 1964, and a military coup took place, and the democratic government of Jango Goulart was destroyed by the military coup, and with an open support of the U.S., the United States. And I remember a graffiti I read in a wall in Rio de Janeiro, no? In that days, saying, no more intermediaries, no more intermediaries. Mm-hmm. Lincoln Gordon, president. Lincoln Gordon was the ambassador of the United States.
So the person who wrote that graffiti knew what was going on.
Yeah, graffitis. I am a reader of graffiti. I'm reading the walls all the time because it's something like the printing house of poor people. The easier way to express they have, no?
Now tell me about your own country in Uruguay. You were a journalist and then you yourself were imprisoned. What happened?
I was in prison but a few days, because there was an international movement in solidarity with me, generous people.
What year was this?
And then I was briefly prisoner, but I went to Argentina, to Buenos Aires, because I knew this was just the first chapter of a possible impossible life. And then I went to Argentina, where I was... This magazine Crisis, which was the best-selling magazine, cultural magazine in all the Spanish world, 35,000, 40,000 wow. copies we sold each month. And it was a marvelous team of writers there, with a common face in a different conception of culture than the established one. We did not feel at all that we were chosen people by God to illuminate the masses. No, not at all. Our conception of culture was exactly the opposite. A cult person is this person able to hear other people. To hear other people, a person that have 2 ears and 1 mouth, only 1 mouth, because is able to hear twice before saying or writing once. And so the magazine Crisis was open to public voices, to voices of anonymous people, but who was creating a culture inside the jails, for instance, las cárceles, the jails, the madhouses, the factories, and all.
So you'd collect their stories or their poems or their songs?
Yes. Factories in which the workers couldn't see the sun, for instance. How was the life? And the dreams at night.
So
it was a very, very interesting experience.
But then you had to leave Argentina too, didn't you?
Yes, because I left Uruguay because I don't want to be in jail. It's quite boring. And I later left Argentina because I don't want to be dead, which is more boring, even more boring, laying at a cemetery or being thrown in the sea. To be eaten by the sharks, like my brother, Haroldo Conti, a great writer who was a member of our team there in the magazine.
He was thrown from a plane?
He was caught by the Marine Force, and they opened his
belly? Abdomen.
The belly.
Mm-hmm.
And threw him to the sea where he was eaten by the sharks. Mm.
And this was during the Argentinian dictatorship.
Yes, you know, he was the best Spanish language writer, the best in the subject of water, the sea, the rivers, the streams. He was so deeply related to this world, and it seems to be a bad joke, no? How he finished.
Right. Oh, that's a haunting memory. You write a lot about memory. You're a defender. You're an advocate of memory.
Yes, but not as a visitor of museums. No, memory as a live way history has to be present. To be how the past can become present, and teaches us. And some lessons, not to be forgotten.
You have a line in this book, Children of the Days, Eduardo Galeano, where you say, knowing the before lets you create a different after. And that's what this book is about and a lot of what your work is about, no?
Yes, trying to create or imagine a different after, a different future. Instead of accepting future as destiny, as a fatality of destiny, reinvent future, imagine it, and try to help making a different world.
It's against fatalism.
Yes.
And part of that is you praise the power of writing, of poetry, of art, of music, of storytelling.
Yes. Not only the famous writers or the famous musicians or the, no. Art as something is being, existing everywhere, even done by people who doesn't know that they are doing art.
That comes out.
These were my professors in the cafes, you know. I didn't have a formal education. I abandoned the school at sixth grade, and later everything I know about life and death and joy and dreams and love and hate and all I learned in the Montevidean cafes.
In the cafes.
In the cafes, hearing stories told by anonymous people who taught me how to tell something. An episode, something occurred years ago, or perhaps centuries ago, and give it back to people, to the audience in a cafe. It was not a big audience, 3-4 people in the same table, but receiving back something happened, and then this happened again. You could hear the horses, the sound of the bullets in a war, in a battle. And this is the key of art. I mean, art is a human ability, a human possibility of recovering the past and bring it alive in such a way that it becomes present. And so it's against death.
Art against death. I'm speaking with Eduardo Galeano, author most recently of Children of the Days, A Calendar of Human History. And he says in this book, in a chapter called The Longing for Beauty, that we've had this innate thirst for making art and beauty from the very beginning. I'm just going to read one sentence. Many years before that thing we call civilization, we were turning birds' bones into flutes and seashells into necklaces. We were making colors by mixing earth, blood, powdered rocks, and plant juices to beautify our caves and turn our bodies into walking paintings. That's just part of the lovely writing you'll find in Eduardo Galeano's Children of the Days, which I can't recommend enough. It's a spectacular book. We have about 5 minutes left, I think. Not in this book, but in an earlier book. It may have been either Mirrors or the Book of Embraces. You had a story that stuck in my mind just about the power of literature or of poetry. There's a poet, I can't remember his name, I'm sure you do, during Spain, Franco's Spain, and the one of Franco's best generals had arrested this poet. And the night that he arrested him, he took one of the poet's book of poetry, read the poetry, and according to your story, the next day, the general quit his army and went into exile. That's the power of the written word, right? The power of the story, the power of art.
Yes, you know, one of the best Spanish poets in all times was Federico García Lorca. And he was killed by Franco because he was progressive. I won't say red, but progressive. And he was different, and he was homosexual. And they couldn't understand all these scandals together. And he was a great, great poet. And so they killed him. And afterwards, he was forbidden in Spanish theaters because he was a playwright, an important, very important playwright. And during years and years, the theaters could not play his work. One of the interesting contradictions of this happened when a Uruguayan team of theater people, actors and actresses, went to Madrid and had the mad idea of challenging the censorship, and they put in scene one of the best theater of García Lorca called La Zapatera Prodigiosa. And at the end, the public, the theater was full, absolutely full of people, didn't applaud it. I mean, they applauded, but with their feet. Their feet in the floor, at the floor.
They stomped their feet.
With their feet, not with their hands. And so the Uruguayan actors and actresses were, amazed, disappointed. Perhaps they have done a bad job. What is it? They couldn't understand. And when they told me in Montevideo, back in Montevideo, what happened, I imagined a possible explanation. And I told them, perhaps they were applauding you, and they were using the feet instead of the hands, because this is a way. This was a way to applauding the author of the piece, to tell him, para que sepas, Federico, lo vivo que estás.
That he's there, that Lorca is there. We're going to have to leave it at that. That is a great story by the great storyteller, Eduardo Galeano. Thanks so much for being my guest today on Progressive Radio.
No, thanks, Matt.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.